precious and secretive devices to the feast, and would want to keep them away from the prying eyes of outsiders," he said smoothly. "So, candidates, now is the time. Go and fetch anything you need for your demonstrations. Please return here in exactly 5 minutes with anything you need. Then the doors will be unlocked. Do not be late."
The heavy door was slammed shut, and Mr. Bunn and Kingfisher locked the door with the two keys, one at the top, one at the bottom, and all the guests began a rush upstairs. Seth hadn't a clue what precious and secretive devices Kingfisher could possibly be referring to, or what anyone would be demonstrating. He didn't understand why the whole meal was cloaked in secrecy, or why it needed such fancy procedures. He was fascinated by it all. But at that moment, none of that mattered. He knew that the dessert was beautiful and perfect, and he felt this was definitely the day his life was going to change.
Chapter 10. It was all Seth.
Seth couldn't help but return in 5 minutes to watch as Mr. Bunn and Kingfisher unsealed the room. First, Angelique Square and Dr. Thelomius took their seats on the far side of the table, and then there was a flurry of excited chatter as Professor Papperspook guided in Gloria, followed by a clearly excited Dunster Dunstable rubbing his hands, with Count Marid and Kingfisher bringing up the rear.
7 guests. Seth looked around eagerly to see who the 8th might be, but he suddenly felt a heavy hand on his collar and smelt Henri's garlicky breath as he was hauled towards the kitchen to face the pile of washing up that had grown to such a tower it was almost waving at him. Seth rolled up his sleeves and started to run foamy water, unable to suppress his curiosity about what was happening behind that closed door. If kindly Dr. Thelomius was seriously impressed by the dessert, might Seth have someone he could confess his dreams to? Someone he could maybe ask for help in getting away and finding somewhere he could practice his cooking and not to have to do it in secret? But his inside seemed to sink under the weight of knowing that he would first have to stand up to Tiffany if he was going to announce that both the pavlova and the apricot Delice were his creations. Would anyone believe him? As he prepared for battle with the crusted saucepans and overflowing bins, Tiffany's words came back in a rush to haunt him.
"You'll never leave this place. Every time I come home, you will still be here in your rightful place, up to your elbows in potato peelings. You know you will. You will never be like your dad."
He rolled up his sleeves and moved towards the terrifying pile. He lifted the first saucepan into the soapy water. His real life was about 1,000,000 miles from his dreams. How would he ever become a great chef like his father? It was never going to happen. He was never going to be able to prove to Tiffany, to everyone, that he wasn't simply fit for washing up. He picked up the first plate and dunked it in the water. Then he stopped, bent his head, and groaned with a deep weariness.
"The only way it's going to happen is if I make it happen," he said.
He was talking to himself. The kitchen was completely deserted. Not even nightshade was around. No one was checking on what he was doing. He slipped the black book out from where he had tucked it inside his tunic, and found this time it was so warm his hands dried the instant he touched it.
"My only way out of here is if I practice and practice and become as good a chef as my father, not if I spend my time washing up."
He flicked through the pages of the black book, the most exciting and enticing book of recipes ever. Seth felt that stirring thrill of excitement in his chest. There really were the most incredible ideas in there. swan with chestnut stuffing. Well, he wasn't going to rustle that up in a hurry. But there was one here that he could try, and it would take his mind off what was happening behind that closed door. How long would it take them to eat the main course and get to dessert? Seth checked the clock again. He had at least an hour to fill, and he'd only be nervously twitching. Cooking would take his mind off things. And that washing up would still be there in the morning. He propped the book up in front of him and began to cook.
Chapter 11. Something He Ate. The guests had been cocooned in the dining room for 2 hours now, and Seth decided to tiptoe into the cramped writing room next door and put his ear to the wall to see if he could find out anything. But before he could even start to listen, there was a terrific crash. Seth stepped back from the wall in alarm. What had happened? It sounded like a chair falling over. He heard the door to the dining room burst open. As he dashed into the lobby, he saw that Mr. Bunn had got there first, and was flapping about in a daze, looking around wildly, waving his hands in panic.
"Help!" he cried.
"Help!"
he added more loudly, tearing at his hair and staring around. Seth peeped around the door frame into the dining room, unsure what to do. What on earth was happening? Everyone was on their feet, crowding around something. Norrie Bunn, Henri and Tiffany all rushed past Seth. Pointy-eared Dorinda Dunster Dunstable was waving something around. It was the long-stemmed dish that had contained the apricot dessert. Then the group parted, and Seth could see that everyone was crowding around the small figure of Dr. Tholomyès, who was clutching his hands to his throat. His face was turning purple. He was staggering and fighting for breath. Professor Papperspook rushed forward and slapped him vigorously on the back. There was a terrible cry from someone. Seth thought it was Count Marid, as Dr. Tholomyès flailed at the air and collapsed into a heap on the carpet. There were confused cries of, "Is he choking? It's something he ate," and, "There must be something we can do." Seconds later, Papperspook shook her head gravely from where she was kneeling beside Dr. Tholomyès. "It is too late for help. I'm afraid there is nothing to be done."
"No,"
wailed Count Marid.
"It cannot be."
"I'm sorry, but Dr. Tholomyès is dead," announced Papperspook, "and it looks like poison." A small series of gasps went around the room, sounding like a whisper. Seth felt as if his insides had been hollowed out. Kingfisher spoke loudly, saying that he was in charge, but it was lost in the clamour of hysterical voices.
"Gloria, look away, my dear! Let's get you away from here!"
Professor Papperspook grabbed Gloria and started to hustle her from the room, trying to shield her eyes.
"I don't want you to have to see this."
Dunster Dunstable waved the long-stemmed glass dish in the air, almost swiping Angelique across the nose.
"The dessert!" he cried. "He ate this, and he died! The dessert killed him!"
"That was very clearly labelled to be eaten only by Dr. Tholomyès,"
trilled Professor Papperspook, her parting shot as she and Gloria fled up the spiral stairs. Seth was frozen to the spot. He was aware of Mr. Bunn and Tiffany sharing a shocked glance. Then Dunster Dunstable advanced on Tiffany. She took a step back. The boy was much smaller than her, but still Tiffany hunched back alarmed as he moved closer, waving the dessert glass in her face. Somehow, everyone seemed to move at the same time, and Seth could see Dr. Tholomyès completely motionless in a heap, his hand still gripping a long silver spoon, his eyes wide, his mouth open. Seth wanted to turn away, but his eyes seemed locked to the horrible scene. The confusion and clamour was drowned out by the real horror before him,
and for a moment all he could hear was the pounding of blood in his ears and that nightmare vision of Dr. Thelomius's dead body on the floor. His nose picked up a faint scent, like bitter almonds. Strange.
"I'll handle this," said a voice.
Seth thought it was Kingfisher, again trying to get some control.
"We were told this was your work."
"Tiffany Bun.
That dessert. What did you put in it?"
he snapped. Tiffany stared around her. Her eyes wide in horror, and she started to shrink back into the corner. Her father threw a protective arm around her shoulder. Count Married clasped his head in his hands and let out a huge, rending wail.
My friend is dead!"
He shook his large head from side to side. He began to advance on Tiffany, who was now cowering in the farthest corner.
"Why did you do this?"
Tiffany's face drained of color as she shrank against the wall, her eyes big and wary. Then she seemed to regain her confidence and shrugged off her father.
"It was nothing to do with me,"
she announced as she stood up straight and her gaze began combing the room. She stopped as her eyes locked with Seth's, where he hovered just outside the dining room door, frozen, still unable to truly take in what had happened. Then her face grew fierce, and she moved forward in a swift movement, shoving aside Angelique, then Dunster Dunstable, who was still waving his glass aloft. She moved relentlessly forwards. Everyone stepped out of her way as she advanced. Seth felt her grab him by the collar, and he was shoved, stumbling in front of the crowd. He faced many pairs of shocked and accusing eyes. Tiffany held the back of his tunic in a powerful grip. There was no escape, nowhere to hide.
"The desserts were nothing to do with me at all," she announced. "It was all Seth. He's the one responsible."
A murmur raced around the room and started to grow.
"Don't look at me. It wasn't me. If anyone here poisoned someone, it was Seth,"
Tiffany declared, her voice ringing with confidence. Seth saw Kingfisher approach, his face livid. Before he even knew what was happening, Seth felt himself bundled out of the dining room and was shoved from behind towards the broom cupboard. He catapulted into the darkness, and the door was locked. Part 2 Chapter 12 A Search for Deadly Poison. Seth groped in the cramped, dark space, his only companion a well-worn mop, a bucket, and a box of rusty tools. He turned the bucket over to use as a stool and slumped down, drawing his hands through his untidy hair. It was difficult to take in what had just happened. Impossible to believe that kindly Dr. Thelomius was really dead. And it looked like everyone thought it was something to do with that apricot dessert he had made. But how could it be? He sank back shakily. Only a few hours ago, he'd been convinced today was his day. His chance to turn the tables on Tiffany and change his life. Instead, Henri's portentous prediction when he'd seen that firefly had come horribly true. Murder had come to the Last Chance Hotel. "So," hissed a voice from the other side of the locked door. "Plan A. I guess you sit there and just keep your fingers crossed. Things will sort themselves out. And maybe they'll realize you are completely innocent." Seth moved closer to the door. Had someone come to let him out? And just who was it speaking in that low, purring voice? "That security chap has called all of them into the hotel lounge to make their statements. That means now's your best chance to search everyone's rooms." A female voice,
It was a strange accent. Soft.
You need to find out who is really responsible, or you'll get the blame. Be brave, Seth. Get to it.
Seth felt small and terrified, and not at all brave.
I'll get caught, and things will be even worse.
They won't sit in that room forever, looking at each other like they don't trust each other a whisker. You'll have to do it now.
Still, Seth didn't move.
Not the first time you've been locked in with the mops and the buckets, is it? You've dreamt of getting away the last couple of years. Prison might not be so bad. Thought you'd at least miss the garden.
So it's goodbye, then, went on the voice, more urgent now.
Or you could remember the toolbox.
How did the voice know Seth had been locked in this cupboard many times? Seth sat for just one moment longer. Then he scrabbled around. The toolbox was where it always was, and in the darkness he groped for a screwdriver and removed the hinges from the door. They came away easily.
"Who are you?"
Seth asked, looking around as he emerged into the softly twinkling lights of the deserted lobby. He felt something move past his legs. But it was only Nightshade, who leapt on a carved figure, one that Henri spent his free time whittling.
"I hate these things,"
the voice hissed as Nightshade pawed at it. Seth stared at the cat.
"Nightshade? That's not you speaking."
"Looks that way. But don't go asking me to explain.
Hang on a minute. I mean..."
He shook his head hard. This could not be real.
"I'll tell you the truth, Seth," she purred. "I've always thought I could talk. I just never saw a reason to do so until you needed my help."
Nightshade darted ahead of him, up the stairs.
"You are in a pretty pickle, and we need to move.
Master Key, Seth!"
What are we doing, Nightshade?"
"My whiskers, do I have to tell you, Seth? Someone brought poison to this hotel. Let's try to find it before they have a chance to get rid of it."
On any other day, he would have at least paused to puzzle out how it had happened that his cat had started talking. But he was already too stunned by everything else happening, his thoughts too busy imagining a hand seizing his shoulder and an angry voice demanding why he was no longer safely locked up. If he was really going to sneak out and try to search some of the rooms for poison, he had to do it fast. His terrified legs managed to move, and he sneaked past the hotel lounge, where behind the closed door he could hear agitated, raised voices. He dived to swiftly take the big key from under the counter of the welcome desk, and followed Nightshade as she padded up the stairs, his breath coming short and fast, fearful of being caught at any moment.
"But how will I even know what the poison is?"
Seth asked helplessly.
"You think. You are in the dining room. I bet you smelt the poison. Use your nose."
Seth forced himself to think of the dining room. He had to focus on his nose, and not think of the horror of watching Dr. Tholomyès writhing in agony. Yes, there had been a smell.
There was something, a sort of sweetly bitter smell, like bitter almonds.
Had that been the poison? It must have been, because he'd never come across that smell in the hotel before. Nightshade was standing by the first door, and he unlocked it, still not quite believing that he was taking advice from his cat.
"Professor Papusbuk's room." Nightshade slid past his legs. "Looked right upset when that Darinder mentioned Dr. Tholomyès was here. Let's see what she's hiding."
Seth went straight over to a smart black leather case with heavy straps. It was sitting on the desk, wide open, and it contained bottles. Seth couldn't believe his luck. Two rows of small, intricate glass bottles, 8 in total. Perfect for bringing poison to the hotel. Each had a label. Lark song. Blackbird warning. Robin calling. And blue tit cry. What did they mean? Gingerly, Seth put his nose close to the bottles, but he could smell nothing. I'm going to have to take out a stopper.
Just be quick!
Nightshade was right behind him. He seized a bottle and pulled out the stopper. Instantly, the room was filled with a sudden, powerful swell of birdsong, as loud as if he'd set off an alarm in the room, as if a flock of birds was right there with him. He thrust the stopper back in, and the sound immediately ceased. Seth breathed again, darting a look over his shoulder, and waiting to see if the noise had brought a footfall on the stair.
"Can't you be a bit quieter, Seth?"
They were both still for a moment. Seth was convinced he heard a creak from below, and his heart lurched.
"Perhaps I'll just go and,
said Nightshade, slipping out of the door, returning a moment later, saying the coast was clear and everyone was still in the lounge.
"But do get on with it. Sure you used to move a lot faster,"
she growled. "Terrific. I've got a cat that's decided to tell me she learnt to speak ages ago, and she just insults me." But Seth followed, his heart pounding, his eyes shifting left and right, as he crept next door into Gloria Troutbeam's room, where he searched under the stern eye of a portrait of a woman with a long face, who looked like she'd love to squeal and give him away. Nightshade sat on the bed and began to slowly lick her front paw.
"Nightshade," he said irritably, "please can you not sit on the bed? You know you're not allowed anywhere near the guest rooms. If Norrie finds so much as a single cat hair, I'll be dead anyway."
The cat instantly leapt off the bed.
"Tell you what, Seth, I'll keep a lookout."
She slipped out again, and Seth examined some very weird-looking boots. A strange design with extra thick soles. He picked them up and turned them over.
"Who are these people?" he muttered. "Do they all have weird stuff?"
He was crouched low, and his nose told him that somewhere in this room there was the smell of something. Pears, maybe, but unusual. He followed his nose, which took him to the bed. He fumbled around under the mattress and pillow, reached in, and he was right. There was something hidden there. He brought out a paper bag, which he opened hopefully. And he was staring at pear drops. A lot of pear drops. His hopes sagged. A creak came from outside, and there was a soft warning pouring on the door. Seth held his breath and kept his ears pricked. If the questioning in the hotel lounge was over, any moment now someone was going to realize he was no longer under lock and key. He had to get back downstairs.
"I should never have listened to you, Nightshade," he muttered.
All he could do was stay silent and hope Miss Troutbean was not coming. Then the soft pouring came again, and he hoped this was Nightshade giving him the all-clear signal, because he slipped straight outside. Nightshade led the flight back down the stairs, but stopped halfway. Seth almost tumbled over her. He realized why she'd stopped. There was someone in the lobby below. He waited, breathing heavily, his shoulder next to a portrait of a tiger that looked like it would love to reach out a claw and take his left ear off. He positioned himself ready to fly downstairs the moment the coast was clear, and get back into that cupboard the second he got the chance, or fling himself back up the stairs if he was spotted. Voices. And they were coming from right outside the cupboard where he was supposed to be imprisoned. Any second now, someone would open it and discover that Seth wasn't inside. Seth's heart
hammered painfully. He should never have done it. It had been stupid to go upstairs. Now there was no way he'd slip back inside without anyone knowing he'd escaped. This was what happened when you found yourself taking advice from a talking cat. He was doomed. Chapter 13. Entrance of Film Star Hare.
See sense, Kingfisher. I can't believe you're being so obstinate, said a girl's voice, rising.
I'm in charge of security here, Angelique, replied the voice of Kingfisher, who was pacing the lobby below. He shook his shoulders and straightened his suit. Please remember.
But after a short pause, in a voice that told Seth she was used to organizing other people, Angelique Square added,
But you are following basic procedure. All exits and communication channels are sealed.
Kingfisher snapped.
What's the point? I took statements from everyone. They all ate the same food. Except that dessert. It's an open and shut case.
Seth heard the sound of papers being shuffled. He produced a dessert secretly in a small cubbyhole behind the deep freeze, so that no one could see what he was doing. It sounded as if Kingfisher was reading aloud from notes.
He did it last minute, and then the dessert was labelled very clearly for Dr. Tholomyès. It was placed directly behind him, so that there was no risk of anyone else eating it. The very second the dessert arrived, the door was locked.
Seth listened with a creeping feeling of horror. It was all true. That was exactly how it had happened. The dessert had been the last thing to go into the dining room, and after that the door was locked. And from the moment it was unlocked, the dining room had been full of people. So, when had it been poisoned? Surely no one would have taken a great risk of slipping something into Dr. Tholomyès's dessert in a room full of people. And if so, how had they managed it without being spotted? That seemed extraordinarily unlikely. So how else could the poison have got into that dessert glass?
Murder by the kitchen boy is the only thing that adds up, said Kingfisher smoothly. Unless someone was utterly brazen and slipped something in that dish in full view of everyone, and managed to do it without anyone noticing what they were up to. I mean, come on. Really, how else could the poison possibly have gotten into that dessert? You answer me that, and I'll arrest them instead.
Even when he'd been accused and locked in the cupboard, Seth had clung to a hope that everyone would have to recognize he wasn't responsible for what had happened to Dr. Tholomyès. But the full chill of what they were saying was sinking in. No one else could have done it. How on earth had the poison really got into that dessert glass? Unless he could find an answer for that, Seth had a terrifying vision of himself on a long, uncomfortable ride in a police car before the evening was even over, followed by a life in jail. What on earth was he going to do?
All right. So it appears clear-cut, said Angelique, although her voice was full of curiosity and doubt. And as I was sitting in front of that dessert the whole evening, and no one went near that table, I can tell you that is not the answer either. What we have here is a real mystery. And do think about who we are dealing with here.
Seth was puzzling and worrying so frantically he thought he must have misheard what she said next.
The Sorcerer General has been murdered. Just imagine, Gregorian, just for one moment, that you are wrong, and that you just let all the other suspects go.
Sorcerer? Seth's brain reeled again. What was she talking about?
I had that Seppi character fixed as a bad lot from the start. I can get him to confess, Kingfisher continued, his voice like cold steel. I can get it wrapped up, and we can all be out of here tonight.
There was the soft rustling of silk, and Angelique Square moved into view. She was wearing a black evening dress, with a red cape, and leant on a long, silver-topped, red-lacquered cane, which she lifted to point at Kingfisher's chest. "Follow procedure. Get magic on here now. You know you must." Seth kept perfectly still, his ears pricked, Nightshade at his side, desperate to find out more.
"Don't interfere,"
drawled Kingfisher. Angelique tossed back her hair and jabbed at Kingfisher with the end of her cane.
"The most important sorcerer in the land has been murdered. You're really going to take on the whole investigation, single-handed, Gregorian?"
Kingfisher's fingers worried at his moustache.
"If Magicon rage on at me for wasting their time, I shall blame you, Angelique. I'm telling you, this case could not be simpler."
Heavy footsteps took Seth by surprise. Kingfisher was on the move. Seth flattened himself again, against the central wall around which the stairs spiraled.
"And I should make sure you have thorough background on everyone before you close down communications, because they will ask you," Angelique called. "Follow procedure."
Seth listened hard, not yet daring to breathe normally, waiting for the second set of footsteps to follow, his heart beating rapidly as he waited. All he needed was one small chance to get back in that cupboard. But there was no further sound of footsteps. All he could hear was Angelique's dress rustling. But what was she doing? She had drifted out of view, and as Seth listened, he thought he heard a crackle like static electricity. He dared to move a little further down the stairs. She was standing right next to Seth's favorite painting, a color drawing of an owl. So lifelike, Seth could imagine it coming alive and flying at night. She was feeling around the frame, her long, deft fingers going methodically around the edges. Then she took a step back and lifted the cane above her head. Seth thought she was going to launch it into the picture. He moved, his first instinct to protect the painting, but there was no time to grab the cane from her. He could only watch, as the end of the cane crackled and a fierce jet of blue light that was as bright as Seth's tunic shot out. Sapphire sparkles crept and hovered around the edges of the picture before seeming to melt away. Seth stood on the bottom stair, breathing so hard. What had just happened? Angelique Square said without turning, "All right, boy. Kingfisher's gone. And if you've been watching me and think you might have seen something, my very strong advice would be to forget it. Unless you want me joining those saying you should be taken away in handcuffs."
Chapter 14. A Connection.
Seth swallowed and stepped down into the lobby.
No, I haven't been watching you, and I didn't kill Dr. Philomius," he added hurriedly. "If you can help me at all, I'd really appreciate it."
She was writing in a small notebook covered in shiny red leather. Despite the glamour, the makeup and painted nails, one of the first things that struck Seth was that he reckoned she couldn't be much older than him. Calling him boy was a bit much.
"I need to quickly look around. They'll be safe in that hotel lounge for about 10 minutes, and I have questions you might be able to help with."
There was something about the way she said it that made Seth ask,
"You've locked them in?"
He turned, expecting to hear shouts and hammering on the door, but all he saw was Nightshade slipping away.
"No, I thought that might annoy them."
Angelique's nose wrinkled.
"So I placed a confusion enchantment on the door. If they touch it, they forget why they wanted to leave in the first place."
Seth gulped,
feeling utterly bewildered. "I think a confusion enchantment on the door is fine."
He watched, fascinated, as she ran her hands along the frame of a picture of a couple of horses who looked like they'd rather be somewhere else.
"You called Dr. Thelomius the Sorcerer General. When you say sorcerer, what do you mean exactly?"
he asked hesitantly.
"Head of our governing body, the Elysee. Yes, he runs the magical community." "Ran,"
she gulped, and her face crumpled just for a moment. Then she tossed her hair.
"At one time, he was best known for his magical inventions, but he closed his workshop years ago and devoted his life to service of magical people. That's the kind of man he was. He put the magical community first, always. Campaigned for magic to be a force for good."
Seth thought of the short, kindly gentleman with the white hair, a round tummy and twinkle in his eye. He hadn't looked in the least like a VIP guest, let alone the head of the magical community. He'd looked like everyone's favourite grandfather.
"And when you say magical community?"
She threw him a mistrustful look.
"I know the magical world isn't what it used to be, but you are seriously telling me you've never even heard of the Elysee?"
Muttered Seth. "I've lived here my whole life," he finished with a shrug.
"It's kind of quiet out here. I haven't heard of a lot of things."
He only just managed not to blurt out he'd always thought magic existed only in those fairy tales with witches and poisoned apples and elves helping shoemakers at night. She pointed with her cane, indicating that she expected him to accompany her up the narrow, twisted stairs. She marched ahead of him, stopping briefly to examine the picture of the tiger. He followed, reminding himself he had to focus on one important thing here, convincing everyone he had not killed Dr. Thelomius. Could Angelique help him? Should he even trust her? What was she doing with that cane? She leant on it as she walked, but he wasn't convinced that was the reason she carried it.
"Has it really been so long since magical people were common?"
she sighed as they reached the guest floor landing.
"Healers. People you turn to in times of trouble. At one time, everyone knew magic as a force for good. Happy magic."
She shook her long hair.
"Now, what can you tell me about this place? How long have you lived here?"
"All my life."
"Then you know this place better than anyone. You probably have all the answers."
She smiled at him expectantly. Seth didn't think he had any answers. He certainly had plenty of questions.
"The Buns are your parents?"
she went on as she peered behind an ugly vase.
"No, my mother died when I was very young, and my father worked here as a chef."
"Worked here?
Where is he now?" "What is Magicon?" Seth asked, quickly putting a question of his own. "Magicon? The Magical Constabulary. Well, who do you think investigates crime in the magical community?" "Why was Mr. Kingfisher so reluctant to call them?"
"People do describe them as terrifying." She lifted her cane high and tapped it gently against one of the walls.
"I suppose it might be intimidating being interrogated by magical people." "Terrifying? And they're coming here?"
Seth squeaked, wondering just what a terrifying magical interrogation would be like, and realizing he was probably soon going to find out.
"I really didn't do it."
"I try not to worry."
"Not worry?"
Seth was quickly adjusting to the news that there really was such thing as magic in the world, which was astonishing enough, and adjusting to the fact
that he was accused of murdering the chief sorcerer in the land, and now he was about to undergo a magical interrogation. Could anything possibly get worse? She turned and looked straight at him with eyes the color of caramel, then lifted her cane again. This time she wrapped it against the wall hard. Before Seth could even begin to ask what she was doing, he was startled to hear a growl from the wall, as if in answer. It started low, like oncoming thunder. Then first one wall. Then all the walls on the landing began to gently shake. The rumbling and vibration grew until plaster started crumbling onto Seth's shoulders, and he stared around him, fearful the hotel might start to collapse around their ears. Chapter 15. Two Problems. There was a loud snap, like a lightning strike, then a low rumbling that sounded like a voice, and just as Seth thought they should run, it all stopped.
"What on earth was that?"
asked Seth, brushing plaster dust from his shoulders. Angelique merely wrinkled her nose.
"The walls are trying to tell us something. Ever heard that before?"
"A really scary rumbling like the walls are speaking? Definitely not. I would have remembered." Seth's brain was buzzing as he followed her. He was thinking of the moment earlier that afternoon when Dr. Thelomius had touched the wall. There had been a noise. Then hadn't there? Like the wall sighing. What did it mean?
"You said the murdered man, Dr. Thelomius, was once a magical inventor. What exactly is a magical invention?"
"Do you always have so many questions?" She threw him a scornful look and tossed her hair impatiently. "You might have a teleport. That's magic so people can travel easily. Or a teleglobe, a magical way of communicating." She looked at him as if trying to work out if he was too stupid to understand. "Most sorcerers just use the usual ways of doing magic." She turned and must have seen his blank look, because the hair was tossed again. "You know, like coming up with a charm, or you might create a potion to make people do things they didn't necessarily set out to do." Something made him think of that black book. That had been full of all sorts of things. Not simply recipes, but weird scribbling pictures and ideas he hadn't understood. Strange things, the like of which he had never seen before. Like that page with the picture of a tiny cage flowing with light.
"Would a magical invention be like
he began to stutter as he put together his thoughts. A firefly cage, or a..." He never got the chance to finish. Angelique had swung around and was advancing on Seth, her short red cape flying. She flicked up the end of her cane and pointed it to press on his neck like a dagger.
"You spin me stories that you've never even heard of the magical community, and then you come out with that?"
she snapped, her arm raised high, the cane pressing in harder. The only movement Seth could manage was to swivel his eyes to stay focused on the end of that cane. He would have swallowed, but didn't dare.
"What do you know about a firefly cage?"
Angelique's eyes were blazing.
I...
All he was aware of was that cane pressing in.
I think I overheard one of the guests. I don't even know what it is.
He closed his eyes.
"A firefly cage. That is dangerous magic of the most sinister sort, Seth. If you want a word of advice, don't mention that to anyone," she hissed. "Not if your defense is the line that you know nothing about magic."
Angelique held the cane to his throat a few seconds longer, her eyes glinting dangerously, then dropped it back just enough to allow Seth to breathe.
"It's not a line," muttered Seth, rubbing his neck. "I know nothing about magic. What is one, anyway?"
He was guessing. It had nothing to do with the beautiful lightning bugs that lived in the forest. She had looked
truly terrified. A shudder running through her, Angelique snapped the top of her cane shut.
"You really don't want to know. Sometimes magic can be..."
She paused, and looked as if she was having difficulty finding just the right word.
"Some magic can be... horrible."
Just for a moment, learning that magic was real had been a wondrous, fantastical discovery. Now Seth wasn't so sure.
"Won't look good for your defense if Kingfisher finds you wandering about," said Angelique, pointing with her cane.
"You probably need some help getting back into the cupboard."
"I can do it myself," said Seth.
She followed him back downstairs anyway. This time, the lobby was thankfully empty, and he crawled into the darkness. Only hours ago, his life had seemed tough, coping with Tiffany's vile scheming. Now he was accused not just of murder, but of murdering the most important sorcerer in the land. He would rather stay here and suffer at Tiffany's evil hands forever, rather than be taken away with everyone believing he'd murdered Dr. Thelomius, who had only been kind to Seth. But what was he going to do? He was way out of his depth here.
"By the way, which guest mentioned a firefly cage?" she asked before she shut him back into the darkness.
She'd made an attempt to sound casual, but Seth knew she was really interested in the answer.
Sorry, I don't remember."
"Well, Seth,
I suggest you try just a bit harder to find some answers if you want to get yourself out of this mess. If you want my advice, find out how someone could have got into that locked dining room to poison the pudding. That's the key. That's how you save yourself." He heard her sigh. "But right now I have two problems." Seth felt like answering that he was facing a lot more than two problems. He didn't have a clue what she was up to, prodding into everything with that dangerous cane and making the walls rumble. He certainly didn't trust her at all.
"Okay," he said reluctantly. "Anything I can help with?"
"Well, Seth, you've lived here all your life, and that puts me in a really awkward position."
"Sorry to hear it," he muttered.
"Because it could well be that you are the only one who can possibly help me here. But I have to agree with Kingfisher. You, Seth, are definitely far and away the most likely person to have killed Dr. Thelomius." And with that, she slammed the cupboard door, and Seth was alone once more. Chapter 16. He wasn't ready. It felt like only seconds later, when there came the scrape of the key in the lock, and Angelique peered into the darkness of the cupboard.
"I said I'd come and fetch you. Someone from Magicon has arrived. Your interrogation is about to begin."
"Already?" Seth gulped, and could not stop his insides quivering like blancmange. He followed, dragging his feet, trying to find a brave face, one that would conceal his terror. He really wasn't ready for this. He needed to find something, anything to say when they accused him of murdering Dr. Thelomius.
"Please,"
he said in a small voice, as they reached the door to the tiny writing room adjoining the dining room.
"Is there anyone you can think of who would want to kill Dr. Thelomius?"
Angelique turned as she gripped the door handle. Her dark eyes flashed. Her answer was totally unexpected.
"Well, lots of people, I suppose."
"Lots of people?" echoed Seth. That lovely little old man who had reminded him of Father Christmas and had given him a gold coin?
"Really? Like who?"
"As head of the Elysee, he was bringing radical reforms. It made him enemies."
"Enemies?"
Seth tried not to cling too tightly to this sliver of unexpected hope.
"Anyone in particular?"
It was difficult to think of that short and kindly man as someone who had enemies,
Could one of these enemies be here right now, inside the hotel? Red Valerian has been causing heaps of trouble lately. He's suspected of being behind the death of two sorcerers only last week, and his followers are growing. Just tell the truth, Seth. Sure you'll be fine. Angelique knocked on the door and opened it a crack to let those inside know Seth was waiting. She left the door just ajar and hovered, which she must have done deliberately, because she didn't even hide that she was putting her ear to the crack. Seth too listened in. There were two voices.
"And as you are in charge of security for Dr. Tholomyès's visit here," Seth heard a voice say, "you can help with something I'm most curious about. What on earth even brought him to this remote hotel?"
"Part of Dr. Tholomyès's recruitment drive to the Elysee," explained the second voice, which Seth instantly recognized as Kingfisher's.
"It was a meeting for the prospect, sir. All the latest hopefuls of officially joining the Elysee are here."
Recruitment to the Elysee. Seth was slowly understanding. That list, which had been in Dr. Tholomyès's room, had referred to the prospect. So this was what was behind the secretive feast and the strange procedures? This was what had brought all the strange guests here to the Last Chance Hotel? They all wanted to be officially part of the magical world, and they were going through some sort of application process.
"But it's murder, sir. Luckily we have a clear suspect. I wasn't in favour of you being bothered," went on Kingfisher.
"I'm not bothered."
"Poisoning by the kitchen boy. Could not be more straightforward."
"Glad to hear it. When you called, I was in the middle of the deciding set of a tennis match with Andreas Fist. Sounds like I can get back to it. So this kitchen boy slipped a fatal poison into the dessert of the head of the Elysee, and we can all go home."
"Exactly. I've established the clear fact that he's the only person who had the opportunity to introduce the fatal poison into Dr. Tholomyès's food," explained Kingfisher. "So it simply must have been him. Let me arrest him now. You can get back to your tennis," said Kingfisher smoothly. "Although won't you have lost already?"
"Stranger things have happened. It was my serve as well. This is excellent work, Mr. Fishfinger. I shall put that in my report."
"No one else could possibly have done it, eh?"
"What a most intriguing case.
I guess we should meet this kitchen boy, should we? This killer kitchen boy. Right, I am ready to meet our master criminal."
Chapter 17. We Make Criminals Disappear. The door opened to the smallest room in the hotel. Kingfisher dragged Seth in and shoved him into one of four chairs gathered around a desk under the only lamp in the room, which cast a dim light. Gregorian Kingfisher sat in the chair next to him. Seth darted a swift look at the person standing across the desk from them in the shadows, a man so tall he made the tiny writing room feel even smaller, the person who was going to interrogate him. Seth felt sweat trickle down the back of his neck. In the gloom, it was impossible to make out much more than a very tall man with a head of silvery grey hair and a long face. It was difficult to read his expression, as the weak light from the lamp reflected off of his little round glasses. Seth gripped the arms of his chair as a long, uncomfortable silence developed. The tall man drummed his fingers on the desk. After what seemed like minutes had ticked by, Seth began to fear no one was even going to bother asking him questions. Everyone just thought he was guilty. The man from Magicon wasn't even going to give him a chance to explain. Then the finger drumming stopped.
I'd like to hear more about this fascinatingly routine visit by Dr. Tholomyès, he said, addressing Kingfisher.
Routine? Ah, yes, apart from the murder. Unless I've missed something, that doesn't usually happen at a prospect. What does security say about that? Ah, that's you, isn't it, Mr. Fishfinger?
My name is Kingfisher, sir. Gregorian Kingfisher.
Of course it is. So the moment the dessert left the kitchen, it was taken to the dining room.
It was. The 5-minute warning was given once all the food was assembled for the feast. Following all the correct procedures, the door was locked.
And after 5 minutes, the door was opened again?
Asked the tall man.
During that 5 minutes, no one could have gotten into the dining room, insisted Kingfisher. When the door was unlocked, everyone sat down to eat. Angelique Square was sitting next to that dessert right until the moment Dr. Tholomyès ate it. I questioned everyone. She is adamant no one could have touched it.
Well, well. I believe that gives us just 2 intriguing possibilities. Maybe 3.
The man leant forward and completely unexpectedly shook Seth's hand.
Inspector Pewter, Magicon, for all your magical crime-solving needs. You'll have heard of us, of course. I'd like to say that most of the rumors really aren't true.
No, sir, Seth managed to squeak, wiping his sweating hands on his trousers and fighting an urge to introduce himself to this magical inspector as the main suspect. Kingfisher gave Seth a triumphant glance, and Seth could feel his future slipping away. He braced himself finally for questions, the back of his neck prickling. Pewter cleared his throat with a discreet cough, and Seth guessed this was it. The questions were coming.
"Do you play tennis?"
Pewter asked.
Seth shook his head nervously. His voice seemed to have deserted him. He was focused on Pewter being part of the magical police and having all sorts of unusual and unpleasant methods for extracting the truth.
"Very wise," nodded Pewter. "Ridiculous game, but somewhat addictive."
He let out a deep sigh.
"You think you're getting better, but..."
The poison wasn't in it when it went into the dining room, said Seth, speaking quickly, but the words coming out as a whisper. I had no reason to kill him. He was kind to me.
Was he indeed?
Pewter inched the top half of his body across the desk, so his head was level with Seth's.
Quiet for one who's causing all the trouble.
When you said, "No, sir," a moment ago, did you mean you had never heard of Magicon, or just had never heard the rumors?
Both, sir.
Well, well. Now that leads me on to a most important question.
He looked about him, his head almost scraping the ceiling.
Do you think there is any chance of a cup of tea?
He looked at Kingfisher.
And have you offered one to your master criminal?
Faltered Kingfisher. Pewter rummaged in an inside pocket, and Seth took the small, plain white card he slid across the desk. He read the words, which were arranged in a circle. Magicon. All your magical crimes solved. Alongside the words was a picture of Pewter, looking like a headmaster, about to dish out an awful punishment.
We used to have this slogan, "We make crimes disappear." You've heard of that. It was quite famous at one time.
I don't think so, sir.
But it was a rubbish slogan anyway. I mean, no one can make crime disappear. We make criminals disappear occasionally.
His face broke into a smile.
But we do bring them back again. Well, the smile fell again. Most of them.
Seth noticed that after the word "solved" was a small asterisk, and at the bottom of the card in tiny letters
was the word usually.
"What does this mean, usually?"
asked Seth, frowning at the card. "Solved usually."
"Oh, don't worry about that.